sleep, Mom. Come on, go to sleep.
And do me a favor. Don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired.
Well, what the hell are you saying, Doss? You bruised half your body sleeping.
I sleep pretty hard.
Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories.
Hey, it's Brian.
And hey, it's Murdoch. Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories.
Now, you know how to get involved in this show, right? We've done this long enough, I hope. If it's your first time, though, let me tell you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you for joining. Here's what you do. You write us at wearethestoryguys@gmail.com. And like Jeff, he's in Indiana. He writes the show. I don't think this is the first letter we've gotten from Jeff.
This is not the first time we have heard from Jeff from Fort Wayne.
We appreciate you, man. He writes this. Would love to hear what you guys think of and or dig up on this band Elf. E-L-F. I mean, I think of Will Ferrell when you say Elf. That's what pop culture has done to me.
Daddy! Or whatever he says.
I just think of when he jumps on the Christmas tree. That's like my favorite scene. Oh. And then the Christmas tree falls over.
I think of him and Artie Lang having the fight in the store when Artie is the
Santa Claus.
When they get sober Artie to be Santa Claus for a day.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. Okay, that's not what he's talking about. Just spoiler alert.
Something else.
He says, as a kid, my parents had this album in their collection, and they would say it was some local New York band. But all I knew when I was a kid was that this album looked scary as hell to me. I listened to it years later, and then a light bulb clicked on, and I figured out that I recognized someone that was in the band. I know that researching much about them can be hit and miss, but I think there's an unsolved murder, a car accident, and maybe even a Motley Crue tie-in. Oh, man. You know what that means. I told you we were going to do it. The Vince Neil button, it is here.
It is every time.
Every time we mention Motley Crue on the show, we get... Uh-oh, I said it again. I hope that's funny to other people.
I hope so, because I will say, stop it.
I will say one of our producers said they almost ruined their computer by spitting out their drink on their computer when they heard it.
I'd also like to hear how Jeff thought about listening to Elf after he actually listened to Elf.
Like what he thinks of the band themselves?
Yeah, after he's had the light bulb moment.
He doesn't tell us that. So you've heard of this band. You know about this band?
I do know this band, and it's only from being a gigantic nerd, mullet, music archaeologist for things metal. So for me, it was Ozzy, right?
Okay.
And so there was Randy Rhodes, Ozzy, and then why isn't Randy Rhodes on these Ozzy records, which I didn't understand.
Right.
And so then there was the Speak of the Devil record that had Brad Gillis from Night Ranger playing all the Sabbath tunes.
Right.
And then there was Jakey Lee was playing guitar. Then I knew that Ozzy was in Sabbath, but then I heard, and we'll talk about this in the show notes later, like I got to see Dio on TV in Sabbath, and so I realized they had two singers. And then I heard Hearing Aid.
Okay.
Which we're going to talk about later, too.
Okay.
But I'm getting ahead of myself. I just wanted to give Jeff a virtual hug because I knew about the Motley connection immediately before we ever got to the sound effect. I knew exactly what we were going to talk about. And I, too, have a personal story that we've talked about on the show before.
Okay.
That's about Ronnie James Dio and my daughter being born.
Okay.
But I told you that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'll wait patiently though for the for all of these connections you're going to make.
Yeah.
Because I feel like what you're attempting or asking us to do here is to basically do like we're going to talk about Ronnie James Dio.
That's right.
We're going to do a deep dive on RJD.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that. Otherwise, we can't really talk about Elf.
Okay. Yeah. So Elf is a band associated as the first band that Ronnie James Dio was in. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, it's not his first band. It's just like the major first band that people know about. Because Ronnie James Dio has been playing music forever. Like he's been playing music since he picked up the trumpet when he was a little kid. So why don't you do the honors and like let's do the big primer.
Okay.
And talk about when he's like where he's from.
Okay.
And we can talk about the trumpet.
Okay, he is a very interesting guy in terms of the guys in rock and roll. His story has a lot of dips and curves in it here. Okay, Ronald James Padavona?
Yeah.
He's born in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Not a super rock and roll place to be from. July 10th, 1942. Spent most of his childhood in Cortland, New Hampshire. And gets into, you know, usually these origin stories, it's like
AC/DC's Back in Black,
right?
Loved it. It was great.
Right. But this is 42. So 10 years in, it's 52. All he has here is early rock and roll, right?
And right.
So what he does get into is opera at a really young age.
Yeah.
And then he takes these trumpet lessons at age five.
At 5 years old.
Yeah. And, you know, he does the high school band thing. He branches out and tries to start a band, puts his name in the band. This is the thing he does well, right?
And from here on out.
Yeah. He is front and center. So it's Ronnie and the Prophets early. And in the research, you found this video.
It's in the show notes.
It's from 1967. And we should be focused on Ronnie James Dio.
And Ronnie and the Prophets.
Ronnie and the Prophets, as
this group is called. There's Ronnie and all kinds of other things, but this is Ronnie and
but
the Prophets.
But the cameraman is not very focused on Ronnie James Dio in this video.
No. No. It's just on girls' butts.
Just
there's shots of them, but then there's shots of butts, of dancing butts, and then there's a couple of shots of where there's a shot of like the reaction shot of the band's face and then a butt. So it does that. So this is the big thing about Ronnie James Dio. The curveball. He turned down Juilliard.
Yeah.
So he had a Juilliard scholarship, and he turned it down and went to the University of Buffalo to study pharmacology.
I mean, if you're going to be a rock and roll guy, knowing some pharmacology stuff, that comes in handy in the 60s.
Most guys just go amateur. You don't even like go to get a degree for that. You're like, I just got this great cough medicine, and I just take dirt and rocks, and I just put it together with salt.
Where does his name come from?
Oh, the best part is where does his name come from? The stage name. And he did his 10,000 hours, man. This guy played music for decades.
Yeah.
So there was a rumor that his name Dio, his grandmother said that it was a gift from God. And Dio means God in Italian. Okay, this is false as shit. His widow, Wendy.
Did he start that rumor? Did he tell people that his...
I mean, this is what our podcast is about, man.
It's like you that time you told me that Murdoch means savior of the world. And I believed you for 4 years.
It's so off base and so wrong. Like the last thing I tell you, my
you
name.
Were like, Murdoch means sexy man of mystery. And I was like, oh, really?
It means,
that makes sense.
It's a sexy man with a bag of pirate's booty. Like, that's all that means. Anyway, so Wendy, his widow, disputed this. But it's also in his autobiography. So Ronnie James Dio says that the name Dio came from the mafia tough guy named Johnny Dio.
All right. I mean, that's rock and roll, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you picture Dio. If we say Dio, people probably hear his voice. Like, his voice is the thing. He's got this strong, distinctive style. He's got this operatic thing.
Long live rock. You can hear his head, the voice in it.
He's a range monster. Like, the dude can freaking sing. They say it's like from the trumpet.
Right. Absolutely. So he never learned any vocal lessons. He said that everything that he did from his vocals all came from the trumpet.
Like breath control from the trumpet?
Yeah.
And if
you want to get super nerdy about it, because this is what we do.
This is welcome to the show.
So his technique is controlled vibrato. He's got a strong diaphragm. He has the ability to sustain high notes, not just hit them. And he was doing them towards the end, too. And it's like aggression with melody.
I've got a question about vibrato.
Yeah.
So I had a great friend who used to argue that vibrato was cheating. It's not real singing.
When you're doing the vibrato, that's cheating.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like vibrato is cheating?
No.
You think it's a viable vocal technique?
Yes. I think so.
All right. I'm interested. In other opinions. If you think vibrato is cheating, we are the story guys at gmail.com.
I don't think it's cheating at all. But here's what Dio did, we're going to talk about this a bit, like back and forth a bit. But
the stuff of awesomeness that can seem campy to other people, which isn't really, it's incredibly influential into metal now, is the lyrical content.
Oh, it's
the fantasy, the mythology, the supernatural, the fucking dragons, and all this stuff that he talked about are things that bands would not do if it wasn't
for him. This predates Zeppelin.
I mean, but that was all like in one kind of lane.
Okay.
If you think about
it. You think he's more expansive?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that...
I mean, you definitely have bands now who, and to expand it past just the mythical creatures talk, I mean, there's definitely bands that do that. Of all genres, like I'm thinking of... I'm blanking on their name, but there's even like folk rock bands that do this sort of thing now, right? Where they just sort of talk you through these worlds that they create. But even beyond that, you have like Coheed and Cambria, who have like a whole sci-fi thing that they've created, and all these, you know, Rush to a certain degree was doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and like think of when Dio his solo records that came out, he had a song called "We Rock," right? Now, Led Zeppelin would never write a song called "We Rock," but it falls into like the category of the same type of stuff that he's doing. Have you ever wondered? I asked your son this when he came in the door. You ever wondered when an Amish person sees an airplane for the first time if they think it's a dragon?
What are you talking about?
I'm imagining Ronnie James Dio riding a Treyu from The Neverending Story.
After you said that to my son, did you go, hashtag shower thoughts?
No.
Because that's like a thing. That's a thing like on YouTube where people say shower thoughts.
They say hashtag shower thoughts.
Yeah, shower thoughts.
It's a Reddit subreddit. It's a subreddit, but people say that on...
I don't know. I hope my kid's not on Reddit. I just know that he will sometimes say something dumb and then go hashtag shower thoughts. So I feel like he probably was able to keep up with you on that one. That's pretty amazing.
He defined this for metal, for just a ton of other bands. And random observation.
Okay.
When he's in interviews, he's super confident, like about his shit.
I mean, that is most of rock and roll swagger, right? You just got to be confident. You just got to be like, yeah, fucking dragons.
But he's really grateful too. So it's this interesting dichotomy of this person who commands.
Cocky, but also like...
Yeah.
Seems nice?
He seems nice, yeah. You don't see a whole bunch of that. Yeah. So, but anyway.
That's interesting.
That's RJD. We got
it. Okay, so we'll touch on all of this, right? He's the front man for a lot of bands. Frontman of Rainbow, Black Sabbath, Dio, which does not stand for God. And he also... produces a bunch of records. Like, this dude's influence is huge.
Yeah, oh yeah. And he's a collaborator, he's a mentor. And for fuck's sake, episode 143, we had to look it up. Devil Horns.
Oh yeah.
Devil Horns.
Yeah, yeah.
People say that it's him. That it's not like he put the devil horns on all your kids. But it's like he's been credited as the person who's popularized the devil horns gesture, which is synonymous with heavy metal. And where when my sister took me to heavy metal concerts when I was a teenager, she didn't understand why everyone, 10,000 people, were all doing that and doing it. And it looked like it was a Satan church or something, she said. Like, it was totally terrifying.
Now, when she took you, you pulled in the parking lot your first show. Did she look at you and teach you how to do it? Did she show you the formation?
No.
So you were just left to try to figure it out?
No, I'd seen the video. I'd seen it on MTV, man. I
remember.
I was so ready.
I think we talked about this. I was very confused. It went on the Devil Torns episode. I'm sure we talked about this because it's close to I Love You.
Yes.
And so like I was Elvis. Confused when I went to shows, and I was like, I don't understand if I'm doing I Love You, if this is. And then I knew I wasn't a sports fan, but I knew people who were like Hook 'em Horns.
Is this a cow?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are the cows going to eat Motley Crue? Does Vince Neil eat cows?
Are you making me find the sound?
Does he want to eat cow? I don't know.
One more time.
So, but we've got to answer it. Yeah.
Okay, so here's what I think we'll do to answer this question. Because there is so much to cover with Ronnie James Dio, I think we, instead of starting with Elf, so we know Elf is near the beginning.
Yeah, it's beginning.
What if we pause, like take Elf off the shelf?
Ah, I
that happen?
You see what I did there? We take Elf off the shelf.
How is that ever going to happen?
And then we talk about the other bands, and then we circle back to Elf. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it's totally perfect.
Okay. So I'm going to look for you to drive here, because you are the Ronnie James Dio expert among the two of us.
All right. So I don't want to give away too much how this part of his career starts, but let's just say from the ashes of the Elf on the Shelf,
whoa,
Ronnie joins this band called Dio. No, that's Rainbow. That's the other band. That's his last name. Sorry. Anyway, Rainbow ended up being like something that created the blueprint for other power metal. There is an album called Rising in 76, Long Live Rock and Roll in 78, and they're considered super classics.
Go ahead. So Rainbow is 75. I just want to make sure we're on the timeline.
Right. He gets discovered by Ritchie Blackmore, who is in Deep Purple, and Deep Purple used to tour, and Elf was the opening act. And so when Ritchie Blackmore wanted out of Deep Purple, he was dissatisfied with their musical direction. He wanted to have his own solo project, and he wanted to have Ronnie James Dio be the singer. Because he'd seen them open up.
And the first LP is actually called Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow.
That's right, yeah. And it's like super fantastic.
And it's got, at this point, he's already doing the fantasy lyrics, right?
He's doing the fantasy lyrics. And the best thing I have for everyone that I didn't know was a real thing is that there are reaction videos for Rainbow songs. Rainbow has a song called Stargazer.
It's just like random people watching the Stargazer?
It's everybody's... Everyone knows what a reaction video is now. But I bet there's no one listening right now that knows that there are reaction videos for Rainbow's song, Stargazer.
I will say, that sounds great. What I am real tired of is where there's like the marketing scheme of, this hot girl just listened to System of a Down for the first time.
Right.
And I'm like, what is this? We have run out of content. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, and this is random as shit. This is a whole bunch of people listening to it. And
but look at this homeless man listening to Saliva. Yeah. Like, what are we watching?
And this is awesome because the star, even though it's Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow.
The star is RJD, man.
It is. And his delivery is like if Jose Carreras, the Italian tenor, was singing epic metal songs instead of Italian arias. That's what it's like. That's what the reaction is like in the reaction videos. Yeah. People are like, what the holy hell?
Yeah. And so this lyrical theme thing, though, I keep coming back to it. It continues through Rainbow. Right?
Yep.
And then he moves on. Dio leaves. So he becomes sort of the center of all this, even though Ritchie Blackmore's starting the band and gets his name on it initially. And the reason he leaves is because he doesn't get along with Ritchie Blackmore, both personal stuff and musical stuff. But Blackmore wants Rainbow to not sound like a guy is singing opera.
and metal. He wants to go
commercial.
In a commercial direction.
Do you remember this song, Since You've Been Gone? Not to be confused with Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah. Yes.
But honestly, has a little bit in common with Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah. And it is the cheesiest pop banger ever.
It's in the show notes if you want to hear it.
Yeah. Since You've Been Gone! It's Ronnie James Dio does not sing on...
That's when Ronnie James Dio puts his foot down. This dumb shit will not stand. I must talk about dragons.
Yeah. So he leaves Rainbow. And at the same time, for some reason, the gods just spoke to him and said, well, we're just going to fire Ozzy from Black Sabbath too at the same time.
Unbelievable.
So Dio gets approached by Black Sabbath to be the front man of that band. And Dio rejuvenates Black Sabbath.
Yeah, different kind of energy with this guy.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a totally different vocalist, different style, and a little shorter. But just face. And you know, he doesn't walk around the stage like Ozzy does, like he's just like in a trance or whatever. Like he is like, turn up the house lights, Tommy. I want to see everybody.
Speaking of Ozzy, and speaking of the different energy, we've definitely covered Ozzy plenty on the show. Yeah. I also love we're to the point of this show, over 200 episodes, where we get letters from people before they finish the catalog, which is fine. Please send us letters. Don't feel any pressure. We're totally fine with this. But because of that, one of the phenomenons that happens is like, bro, we need more Ozzy content. I'm like, dude, you just got to go back because we've talked about Ozzy a lot. One of the things that comes up is when you talk about Ozzy is this period of Sabbath where Ozzy gets kicked to the curb. And of course, the reason is the thing that they were using to fuel that band, which is
chewing gum,
a medicine called cocaine.
Medicine.
These stories about the excess are well documented. We've talked about them on the show before. But just to get you back into the space of where Sabbath is when Ronnie James Dio comes along, there is this Far Out Magazine article. It's in the show notes. It's called Remembering When Black Sabbath Spent More on Cocaine While Making Volume 4 Than on the Album Itself. I've definitely cited this before in different show notes.
Yeah.
It's amazing, but we need to pull out two quotes again.
And I'll take the first one.
Okay, take quote
you
one.
I'll
do quote two.
Okay, the first quote is, this is a just a quote from the article. The band got so captivated by their coke sessions during the recording that bassist Geezer Butler would admit years later that the making of the album cost the band $60,000 to make in total. The eye-watering figure was sizably less than the band's coke habit while recording it, which, according to rumors, was $75,000.
Oh, man. Okay, quote two.
And this is good.
Perhaps the most bizarre aspect about this whole period in the band's history was the Sabbath were not actively ordering the drugs. They just kept appearing. Osborne revealed in his autobiography how it was all a mystery to him where the cocaine kept flooding in from, writing, "Eventually we started to wonder where the fuck all the coke was coming from." That's a weird Aussie impression. All we knew was that it arrived in the back of unmarked vans, packed inside cardboard boxes, and in each box there were about 30 vials, 10 across, 3 deep, and each one had a screw top. He doesn't remember anything but he remembers this.
But good God. Like, I just thought that people just did that on the back of like commodes and shit and toilet. I didn't know this was like a thing.
The description of the box is unbelievable.
I just thought I was like, hey, you want to do this in the back of the toilet? Like, I didn't know this was this. Anyway, so I kind of talked about this earlier a bit. So at some point, I saw this live video of Sabbath with Ronnie James Dio.
When they're playing Die Young?
It's Die Young. And the whole concert, I put that in the show notes so you can see it. But also just find Die Young 2 by itself. But it blew me away because it didn't sound like Black Sabbath. Like, it was just heavy and fast and he was incredibly a different interactive entertainer than Ozzy.
Black Sabbath considered heavy metal pioneers. Do you think that had they ended when Ozzy left and there was no RJD involved, do you think they'd still have the reputation that they have?
I think so. I think that Tony never wanted to get rid of the band, and then I think that they really limped into the 80s, even though some people would say a couple of those records were good too. But I think that they still would have been legendary.
But Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules are two of the best records.
And were both commercial successes and definitely were critical successes.
And guess who's there? The guy talking about dragons and shit again.
Yeah, right.
he brings it on in to Black Sabbath.
Yeah. However, it's the same stuff happens again, and you can imagine he wasn't in Sabbath that long either.
Okay, so they break up, they get in fights.
2 years.
They get in fights. He gets in fights with Blackmore. He gets in fights. Is it him, or is it the volatility of these other artists and their egos?
Well, we can talk about this a bit, but why don't we just do this now versus blowing it. But I found this he leaves Sabbath to start his own band, right? So I wanted to see who was in that band. So I found a website, and I don't think I put it in the show notes because it's not all that interesting. But it showed the different lineups, and you know, it's like when you go from like dropping the bass player to getting a new bass player,
right.
That's a new lineup.
Right.
If you add a keyboard player, that's
a
considered
lineup.
A new lineup.
Yeah.
So there were over 30, and
of Dio?
Yes. So
So he would.
So what you're saying is he's like Stephen Jenkins of metal.
And there's times where he is the only guy.
Oh my.
So you see Carmen Appice.
Carmen Appice is in the early version, right?
Yeah, he's in the.
He's
early
a patron
version.
Saint of this show. If you've not hit that episode,
and
yet.
Vivian Campbell, who's now in Def Leppard, he was
in it.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
And eventually,
okay. Should we talk about the solo work then?
Oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I like people know Holy Diver.
Yeah.
They know the Last in Line. Amazing anthems, right? You've
Rainbow
got Rainbow
in the Dark.
Yeah. Like, is that top 10 greatest metal song? Top five greatest metal song?
Easy.
Top three easy, greatest metal song?
Easy top 10.
Top 10.
For
okay.
sure.
Okay. I just wanted to know where it was.
Easy. No, like, yeah. And I mean, think about Rainbow in the Dark, Brian, was a smash metal hit.
Yeah.
What's the lead instrument in that song?
What's the song about?
When there's lightning, it always brings me down. But it's like the lead instrument in that song is a freaking keyboard.
The more we talk about this, the more keep playing the keyboard. Play the keyboard.
I can't do it.
So the more we talk about this, the more I'm struck by what you said at the beginning, which is like, this is a guy who was raised on opera singing songs about dragons.
Yeah.
To heavy guitars. And he just keeps moving bands. And then he makes his own band, and he has 20 different fucking lineups of that band. But longevity and adaptability. Let's talk about that.
Right. And, I mean, too, if you, like, look, you go and check and see how long this guy was alive, like, dude, he never stopped playing. I mean, he was playing, like,
he dies
2010. That's right. But, so his career spanned 5-6-ish decades?
Yeah. Wild.
He was making music videos, as you see in the show notes, where there's one with girls' butts that are in it. But he remained relevant. Like, he never dropped off as being like someone that was like passe or anything.
And he was like, okay, so we're talking about he's like hard to get along with in the band structure, maybe. Do you think that's because he's a visionary? Because otherwise, and he's just like demanding the things he wants. Otherwise, he seems like a fairly nice guy. There's a track record of him mentoring musicians.
That's correct.
There's a lot of good press on Ronnie James.
Yeah, absolutely. And he worked on an enormous amount of projects, and he never let the idea that he didn't have a lot of radio hits really like screw up. He was still able to tour until like he wasn't able to tour. He just kept doing it. And as far as pop culture goes, he was in season 3, episode 19 of South Park, where the principal's like, he's a famous artist in the 70s and 80s, Ronnie James Dio, and then it's a guy, and like the caricature of him is so not flattering.
Yeah,
and they all have on Dio shirts.
But he like leans into that.
Oh, he thought it was awesome.
Okay, so this...
Because at the beginning, he's like, is everyone ready to rock? Is everyone here? Everyone, okay. You might know this one. You made it a number one. That's really what it says in the song. And it's like, Holy Dive, and it goes right into the real song.
All right, here's what I want to know.
Yeah.
If we've gotten to the South Park part of Ronnie James Dio, before we go back to Elf, can we please, for the love of God, talk about hearing aid?
God damn it. Yeah. Can we?
So a little bit, pulling the curtain back after 200 episodes, we've been talking about the creation of the show. I've been trying to do a Hearing Aid episode the entire length of the show. I've just, like, I guess this is it. I guess we're going to talk about Hearing Aid now, finally.
And this was not like Third Eye Blind. I never was trying to say, no, you can't. You can't do the USA for Africa heavy metal.
Trying to bribe me to get it done. We just, it was like, how do you make a full episode out of this? But this is how we do it. We'll do it now. Let's go.
Yeah, so I'll jump in a bit. So in 86, Hearing Aid was started as a Band-Aid USA for Africa type project to raise money for famine.
I mean, this is on the back end of
all that.
All that charity, everybody in the studio holding their headphones like this,
right,
singing into the mic breathily, like all of that with like Bono and Sting and Lionel Richie.
But who starts this? It's fucking Ronnie James Dio.
Ronnie James Dio!
Dio!
Jimmy Bain, the bass player, and Vivian Campbell, they organized this.
Fucking Campbell.
So think about, you watch that USA for Africa thing on HBO, that documentary, and it's Lionel, like it's Lionel and Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson. This is Ronnie James Dio and his guitarist and bass player.
The song is called Stars.
It sure is. So there's 40 metal musicians that are on it. Ronnie sings the first line. The clip is in the show notes. Can I sing Ronnie's line?
Please.
Can I do it?
For the love of God, please do it.
Who cries for the children? And then after that,
that's going to be our new hot button. After the Vince Neil thing, it's just Murdoch's doing Ronnie James Dio in Stars.
And then after that, it's just a fucking banger. It's just like, so
Hold on. Your daughter is on the premises. Should we pull her in and ask her if Stars qualifies as a banger? Because I have a feeling she would say we are misusing that term.
I think she's going to say, yes, we are incorrect with how we're using that. Stars, by the way, was recorded May 20th and 21st in 85.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, it's almost 40 years old.
Right. And it didn't come out for a little. They wanted it to come out right after that, but there was contractual stuff going on, and some of the people couldn't make it to the session, so there's other live songs that are on there. Up to the Limit by Accept, there's a live version of that. Heaven's on Fire, Kiss from the Animal Eyes video.
Watching you lose your mind over this stuff is so fun.
It's so fucking embarrassing. Anyway, so they started recording at Sound Studio, and then they moved it to A&M, which is where We Are the World was recorded and edited.
Why not?
Right? So that's where it was edited and mixed. And do you want to read every one of these freaking people of the band?
I mean, I'm going to try. There's so many of them. Yngwie, Nugent, Tommy Aldridge, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Quiet Riot, Dokken, Motley Crue, Twisted Sister, of course, Dio, Queensryche, Blue Oyster Cult, Vanilla Fudge. Y&T, Rough Cut, Jeffria. Journey, W-A-S-P.
We Are Sexual Perverts.
And Night Ranger.
Yes, as well as Spinal Tap.
I mean, if Spinal Tap's invited to the party. Well, and I do love that because it sort of lets everybody in. It's like, we understand what's happening here. Yeah. We're all being silly, but also we're doing good.
Right, and we're, yeah.
Lead vocals.
You do the vocals, I'll do the guitar players.
RJD.
Yep.
As we've already covered. Robbie Halford. Kevin Dubrow.
Yeah.
Jeff Tate.
Yeah, from Queensryche.
And a little guy named Donnie Dokken.
And so then there's a whole, like, if you're a guitar player, guitar solo person or whatever, like, the erection you will have listening to this thing will last longer than the pill that you would take to make it work, because there are guitar solos back-to-back by Vivian Campbell, Carlos Cavazzo from Quiet Riot, Brad Gillis, Craig Goldie, George Lynch, Yngwie, Eddie from Twisted Sister, and Neil Sean from Journey. And there's even more people. It's just a cavalcade of guitar solos.
All right.
But now...
I would like to do a time check. It is... most of our episodes, they clock in around 40 minutes. We are at 30 plus minutes, and we've really not actually talked about Elf yet.
We haven't got to Elf.
bro, Jeff, is it okay? Can we go now? Can we talk about
Elf? We're going to talk about Elf now.
Okay, what was Elf a creeping Dio band, considering the creepy cover that Jeff saw in his parents' record collection? Were they creepy? That's the first part of this question.
Right. They're not.
Okay.
And what about the car accident?
What about the car accident?
And what about the Motley Crue connection?
When's that going to get old?
So, looks can be deceiving, right? Yeah, and you saw the album cover. It's creepy.
Yeah. They were actually, like, he's not actually writing the crazy lyrics yet.
No.
In this band.
No. They're all rooted in rock and blues.
This is like that band Kiss was in first.
And
who was it? Gene Simmons and, was it Simmons and Stanley that were in the weird band first?
Wicked Lester?
Yeah, Wicked Lester.
Yeah, that's weird you know that thing.
I host this show. Of course I fucking know about Wicked Lester.
So this is the best thing
I like how you got all like territorial on Kiss. I'm the only person on this show allowed to know about Kiss.
How do you know that those Jewish guys from Long Island had a band before the other
it's
guys?
It's just like if I would have gotten mad when you told me that you were learning the guitar parts to songs off of the Blue album by Third Eye Blind. Now, of course I'm not upset about that.
I wasn't really upset about it.
Whatever. We'll talk about this later.
It must have looked like it. Anyway, Elf had more in common with the Stones than it did except Crocus or Dokken, because it sounded rhythm and bluesy.
That's so funny. Okay, so no mysticism and fantasy in these lyrics, right? They were like about love and relationships and shit people were writing songs about in the 60s.
Yeah.
Everyday struggles, yeah. Personal experiences. Okay, here, let's just look at some of these, right? Sit down, honey, everything will be all right.
Yeah, that's not We Rock from Dio's solo record. That's about reassurance and comfort in a relationship and aiming to calm down and support a loved one. That is not the Ronnie James Dio that we know, and it is not some creepy Elf shit at all.
Okay. So what about Nevermore?
Nevermore is a melancholy song about loss and the pain of separation.
There's Are you like reading the All Music Guide, or did you write these?
No, I mean, I looked this up, and then I was like, what is this? And then I looked at different, I was like, all right, this is really the thing.
You should write a book that's just you describing song themes.
Happiness is Just a Thing Called Joe by Elf. The lyrics describe a sense of contentment and joy found in a relationship.
Okay, oh, no. Let me ask about more. Let me... Gambler. Tell me about that one.
Gambler. This track revolves around the high stakes lifestyle of a gambler, capturing the excitement and risk involved. We rock! No, Elf's music was completely devoid of all the heavy stuff. It was just a regular rock band.
What I love about this, though, is that this is what Richie Blackmore saw.
That's what he saw him cutting his teeth
on. This is what he saw and saw the potential.
He saw that he was a rootsy, rocky.
Here's the M. Night Shyamalan twist. This episode is really about Richie Blackmore and his good taste.
So weird. It's fucking weird we went there. But anyway, all that, and you're right, all of that got him into Rainbow and into Sabbath.
It wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened without this band, because Richie Blackmore sees this band. Now, I don't know how they... Did you do your deep dive on Ronnie and the Prophets? Like, what were their lyrics like?
No, I didn't. But good Lord. I think it's great that from the beginning, Ronnie or people around him knew he was the star. He was always the star. Richie Blackmore knew he was the star.
Yeah.
And so did Tony and Geezer and Bill and Sabbath. They knew he was the star. Otherwise, they wouldn't ask him to be the singer.
Who does he take? Like, does he take just Ronnie James Dio from Elf, or does he take all of Elf?
He takes Elf.
Like, so basically, Elf becomes Rainbow when Richie Blackmore grabs them.
Right, because Elf used to open up for Deep Purple when Richie Blackmore was in.
Yeah, you said that, you're right. Yeah.
So he basically just takes them.
Dude, that's wild. I'm leaving this band, I'm taking the opening band, we're doing our own thing. Okay, so there's something else in Jeff's letter. We like... For the purposes of this show, rumor, innuendo, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and murder. Did I hear something about murder?
Murder. Yes, there is
murder.
So there is this story involved.
I just want to be able to tag this as true crime. That's the reason I asked.
That's yeah.
It's a growth strategy.
it is a growth strategy. So I put this. So it's a story involved. We heard is an unsolved murder.
Yeah,
that's related to Ronnie's band Elf. There was a bassist named Nick Pantis, and he was a member of Elf.
Did you know that they were originally known as the Electric Elves?
Yes. They've like name change Arama. Like, absolutely.
February 68.
This is what happened. Yeah.
This is the guy. This guy, Nick Pantis, tragically killed in a car accident, and there's still a lot of like mystery and speculation as to what happened. Band members, they're in a vehicle, it crashes, Pantis dies. But the exact circumstances of the crash, not entirely clear. And so, you know, clear is kind. And if it's not clear, it leads to people making up their own versions of the story. And so the exact circumstances are very unclear, and people freak out about it. Some have described this accident as potentially having suspicious elements, but I don't think
when we looked around at this, especially officially, like no foul play. Nobody said
no. But there were places clearly on the internet that said that this was a suspicious death, that something had happened. But the internet and that pesky DNA. I'm just kidding. There's no pesky DNA. But I found something.
Okay, so what do you think actually happened? Okay. Was it mysterious or not?
No, it's a car accident, and it's in the show notes. So okay. I found it, and so what? This is literally from the show notes. I'm going to read to it. So it says Nick Pantis, 26, 152 Main Street of Cortland, was killed, and five other men were injured as a result of a two car head on crash on Route 8 near Sandyfield early this morning. This is from the actual news report. Nick, by the way, was driving that car. He was driving one of them. So they comprised a musical group. They were reported to be returning home after an engagement in New England. The group was called Ronnie Dio and the Prophets, a recording band.
So wait, Ronnie Dio and the Prophets becomes Elf?
Yes. Becomes, the Electric Elves.
The Electric Elves becomes Elf, becomes
Rainbow.
Rainbow.
Yes.
So that's all the same group.
It all is almost the same crew, except for Nick, who doesn't make it out of this car accident. Massachusetts State Police Lee Barrick said Pantis was operating one of the two cars involved. The other driver was George Barrett, 36. He was apparently traveling alone. He had a broken jaw. So everyone went to the hospital. They had head lacerations or fractures, and Ronnie got out of the hospital, but Nick passed away from the accident. So there wasn't a mysterious murder, which was asked about. There was a car accident, but it's the same thing.
Okay,
there's a person that was killed in a car accident, and it's the bass player.
So, okay.
There was a rumor that was started for some reason.
Probably
there was
for some intrigue around all of this. I mean,
dragons.
I mean, this is a guy singing opera about dragons.
Yeah.
He needs a little bit of like mystique around him. That is interesting, because that's, you know, that's the point of Jeff's question, is the research is fuzzy.
Right.
I don't really know about these guys. And there is a certain point where, you know, in the marketing life of an artist or a band, or in this case, a guy who has had this very long career, the mystique builds up. That's what this show is about, is what is the mystique and what is real. So we're saying there is no murder.
Right. We've also...
In Ronnie James Dio's past.
For Jeff, too, we found out that Elf is not scary.
Yeah, Elf is not scary.
There's not a murder. There was a car accident.
Okay. This is very good. So I think we're down to one last thing.
There's one last part. What was that part?
That would be the Motley Crue connection. Clean it up. Tell me. Bring us home. What's the Motley Crue connection in all of this?
One of the members of Elf is Doug Thaler.
Doug Thaler was in the band?
Who used to co-manage Motley Crue with Doc McGee.
He was in Elf with Ronnie James Dio? Why did I not know this?
Doug Thaler was in Elf, and he used to co-manage Doc McGee.
Okay.
Doc McGee, who got arrested for trying to bring in tons of weed into the United States in the Moscow Music Pop Fest. That all happened in Doug's sphere. He was there.
Well, let's talk about Doug. If somebody is listening to the show and they do not know the name Doug. All right. Doug Thayer, various positions in the music industry, creative roles at major record labels. Like, this guy's had his hands in it. Because of these key associations, he is considered a real heavy metal advocate. He's often credited with recognizing and nurturing the potential of heavy metal when it was not really a thing that was in the mainstream yet.
Yeah,
helped it get mainstream.
Yeah.
He was a forward-thinking exec. He's pushing for these records. He's innovation, right? That's a term with him. Head of the curve, promoting bands and trends, hard worker, long hours in the studio, and obviously he was a supporter of Ronnie James Dio, Elf, and Rainbow.
And he's a super pioneer, really. I mean, the thing is, when you throw people together and say they're associated with Motley Crue, like, normally it's like, good luck with that association. But there's a lot of lesser-known stories about Doug that aren't really well-documented. He was had a very professional legacy, and he was a hard worker, and he stayed in the studio all the time, and people knew him as, like, a really important guy in the industry. He just happened to hitch his star to the guy who managed Motley Crue and Bon Jovi, who smuggled in tons of marijuana.
Yeah, and so your point here is that he was outshined by Doc McGee, because Doc McGee was just a bigger name in the way, a bigger personality.
And more cheeseburgers. If you want to read, come on, I was on a bus with him. If you want to read what I pulled there, I've got there's an interview with Doug that I pulled that's in the show notes that is so freaking long.
And this is about Doc.
Yeah.
That he's talking, okay.
Which for me is, you know, I think I talk about this a little bit, that Bon Jovi documentary or whatever. For me, the best part about it was when all of a sudden Bon Jovi is like, yeah, that was really messed up that I had to do don't do drugs PSAs for my boss, for my manager. Right.
So this is Doug there talking. Doc and I started out at the end of 82. Long story short, he was a difficult person to be in business with. Understatement of the year. We agreed on some things and they didn't play out the way we agreed on them. That's very diplomatic. I had some good times. I made some good money. He got himself into some legal difficulties, and as a result of those, had to agree to do that thing in Russia.
That thing.
A 1989 concert in Moscow. The Moscow Music Peace Festival or something like that. He was on the line to do it, had to do it, was part of the deal with the government to stay out of jail. Now, hasn't Doc said that's not true?
I don't know if he has, but he's false by saying that too.
So it was documented.
It's a plea bargain.
It's documented that this is a plea bargain.
It's a plea bargain.
Kind of said it to every group differently, but for Bon Jovi, it was just part of the world headlining tour. For everybody else, it was like this or that or whatever. He had created problems for himself with Motley Crue. As a result of the Moscow date, the way things went, some of the things Motley Crue were told they could do, nobody else was able to do it. It didn't happen, and they had just had enough. They wanted to know if I would leave and manage them myself. So that's what happened in 1989. I agreed to leave working with Doc and go work specifically with Motley Crue. I had 6.5 years with them, and I felt like I'd rather take my chances on my own than continue with Doc.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's the interview, by the way, is so freaking amazing. There's so many other things I wanted to include, but like it's just like totally impossible to include everything in there. I do want to, I think, correct myself. I don't know if that was really his plea bargain. I think that was his negotiated plea bargain. I think he was like, you know, I know a whole lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like you would do in that situation.
And I can probably do a whole lot of good with the position I have. And I think that's kind of how they talked about it in the Bon Jovi documentary a bit. And so I think that's more so than the government saying, you have to do a concert in Moscow with Bon Jovi and the Scorpions and Ozzy. So he was like, I've got this idea.
Doug Thayer works with Doc McGee and manages two of the biggest bands in the world in the late 80s. Do you think he's loaded?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he's unbelievably loaded and didn't have to continue doing all this work.
Yeah.
Noticeably also for Motley Crue fans of everybody that's listening here, he was noticeably absent in the dirt. Where he could have been in the book.
Doug?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's like, if you go and look everywhere, there's questions everywhere. Like, it's on boards, it's on courts, everywhere.
About, like, why isn't Doug in this?
Why isn't Doug in them? And it's sort of like,
why do you think it is?
It's just like,
you think he's, like, above reproach? How can you be above reproach with those guys?
No, I think it's just that the other stories and the time and the words and everything they had to put in the book, like, just... Doug didn't have things that were as exciting or you know what, also fake and awesome sounding.
He's the one well-behaved guy. Yeah, I mean, we know, we've talked about the dirt is not reliable text.
Oh, yeah, it's not. And it's, I was, through the research I was reading about, there was like another documentary that I've never seen about Motley Crue, and I read this article where all of them were super pissed off about the documentary and how it didn't reflect well on them, and I'm like, why would they give a shit about anything looking bad on them ever? Like P.T. Barnum all day. Like, who cares? But it was it's interesting hearing when they take offense on how they're
portrayed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
wild. Which, you know, there's it was an article in The Guardian, and it was like an archived article from the 90s, and they called them the most despised band in the world. Like, that's what they called them. And then it was like, I'm in a hotel room with the bass player from the most despised band in the world. And they were totally making fun of
having a go at Nikki Sixx, making fun of him, like saying, like, when I was growing up, I was listening to this song on the radio and it's great. And they're like, well, that song, you know, that actually was recorded this year and he was 2 years old. And like, they're just really kind of trying to nail him and trying to show that, like, it's fiction, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, there's always innuendo in things. You have to tell stories so that things sometimes sound a little better. And that's definitely a band that probably. When I had hee haw, I'm ready.
Like, Jeff, I hope we did it justice. There's an episode all about Elf,
yeah,
and Ronnie James Dio,
and Black Sabbath, and Rainbow,
Wowzers,
and my crew.
We are the story guys at gmail.com. If you want to get involved, if you have a question to ask, if there's something you want to hear about, you can support the show a couple of ways: patreon.com/rockandrollbedtimestories. It also really helps if you do not want to give us cash. Understood. If you can just leave us a review, a kind review on the platform on which you listen to the show goes a long way to get other people involved, and we really do appreciate that, so we'd love that as well. And until next time, Murdoch, what should people keep doing?
Keep telling stories.
Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories is a Story Guys production. The show is produced and edited by Brian Eichenberger. Get more stories, hear more podcasts, and book the guys for your conference or house party at wearethestoryguys.com. Copyright Boy Have We Got Stories Productions. All rights reserved.